If you have your existing customers, send an email saying, I really want you to help us grow and I want to understand you better. How did you find us? Why did you choose us? Understanding all of that and helping you grow your awareness. Your CEO now knows the value of the brand and what the outcomes would be if we increase the value of the brand.
Hey, what's up, branding experts? Arek here and welcome to On Branding Podcast. And today my guest is Carlos Williams. And Carlos is the founder of DPC, which is a creative agency based here in New York. And so he worked with big clients such as Spotify, Bank of America, Meta, American Express, and Marriott, just to name a few. Hello, Carlos. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I really like your approach to branding and design, and you present quite different approach to branding. So can you just talk to us, what inspired you to actually start DPC? Because as far as I know, you didn't really have background in design, right? You graduated from a different school. So what inspired you to start DPC and how DPC is different than other creators?
Yeah, my background was in business. I really wanted to run an airline growing up. And I did not have this as a plan in my life. And something that really was consistent throughout my life, though, I was always doing some sort of design project on a computer. I was a terrible hand artist. And so when I discovered graphic design programs on computers, I was always doing something, but it wasn't really, it was more of a hobby. And so ended up working in commercial real estate here in New York. And when I needed fulfillment in life, I was doing graphic design. I was designing wedding invitations and websites and all the stuff for friends. And I was doing it for free. And then you hear enough times, you should really charge for this. And you should really charge for this. Like, you're super helpful in walking me through and helping me understand what I need. And I did. I started a side hustle and was doing wedding invitations, and most likely weddings were paying our minuscule bills at the time. But I realized, as with the business background, is that weddings aren't repeat business. And as much as the bride's friends come up to you at a wedding and say, I'm totally going to hire you in a year when I get engaged, that's not really something you can rely on. And so I wanted to start going after businesses, and I'm still working at two businesses. So I was still working in commercial real estate. And then I moved over to Bain & Company, which is a management consulting firm, doing design for them. Yeah. So I wanted to infuse better creative by tying it to business outcomes. And so that's where DPC really has its origins in this phase of it, where we moved away from doing wedding and small band websites into big business.
Okay, so that's the story behind DPC. That's how you started out. And can you explain what is your approach to branding and design, and how is it different from other creative agencies? On your website, for example, your tagline is celebrate design thinking, right? I think that would be really interesting if you could just explain what does it really mean to our audience and how. And you talk a lot about data and integrating data into design. So can you elaborate on that as well?
Yeah, so I think those are two of the three ways that were very different. And so I'll dive into the third at the end. I want the people who work at DPC to be the most informed people in the room, right? Really understanding what the business outcomes are. And design and creativity and marketing can have tangible business outcomes, whether they're increasing revenue, but they can also increase efficiency, which is reducing costs, right? And so we have to understand that we're not artists. We have clients who we call our citizens. They need to make sure that the money that they're investing in us pays itself off. And so we need to make sure that we're going above and beyond. How that translates is sometimes, like, we leverage our network of printers, for instance. And if we're doing a big event and we're looking at this print budget from the year before that we didn't control, and we say, let's control that print budget. Let's get you better print anyway. Like the things that we have to do are, we send all these print files to your printers. So let's just send them to ours. But then we also want to up level by saying, if we put QR codes all over these print files in strategic places, we can have now a digital element that confirms that person that is viewing the print file or the sign, that confirms that they went there, we got an engagement. It's really hard to quantify. So this is leading into the data side. It's really hard to quantify a lot of your marketing efforts without a call to action, an action taken. And we can pinpoint where that action was taken. We know that we're not sending people to the homepage of your website. We're sending them to a microsite, or we're sending them to a specific page that drives that outcome. And so that we're not only getting conversion data, but we're also getting engagement data. And so many businesses now just don't do that. And it drives me crazy. Like, my team will tell you, if you don't know how your marketing is performing, if you don't know how your brand is performing, then asking us to make it better is going to be a challenge, right? We have hunches, like marketers all over the planet have hunches and hypotheses, and we're all like really confident in what we're going to do. But I don't want to just say, hey, after you worked with us, you got 10 more clients if you're a B2B, right? Oh, you got 10 more clients. I want to understand what the cost to get that those 10 more clients are so that I can come back to you and say, hey, if we scale that effort, here's what you can expect. So and then the third way that we're a little bit different is that we have always done this. It was table stakes for us, but apparently it's different. And we introduce equity at every step of the way in what we do. And so we're always trying to look at how can this product or this service serve more people, get more people to identify with the marketing messaging, and not, most importantly, not alienate any audience out there. And so making sure that it's inclusive, it's equitable, is really important to me. And it's something that we've always done. But over the past 4 years, it's become even more topical.
Yeah. And I love this example that you gave us. So I have a few notes for our listeners. Just keep in mind, like, as designers, as marketers, as, you know, branding experts, we are not really artists. We need to, in some way, rely on data to prove that whatever we do, whatever we design, whatever creative we come up with is actually working, right? You gave us a great example of print materials, which is really hard to track performance of print materials. But if you put a QR code on them, then you can direct people to a microsite, and then you can track the engagement. I think that's a great example of how data can drive the design, can be used in design and branding. So I think that's great. And you also optimize marketing, right? So you focused on data and then on optimization, as you mentioned, equity. You call it equity, right? So if you have a product or service, you and your team get together to think about how to optimize that, whatever it is, like a marketing campaign or design, to not alienate certain audiences, but try to appeal to a broader audience and make it more effective.
It's a thankless job sometimes, because it's people don't realize, hey, our previous brand or our previous marketing messages didn't appeal to, for example, Black women. And Black women drive a lot of spending in the U.S. right now, like highly educated subset of the population, raising families, doing a lot with a little, and they want to work, they want to shop with brands that identify with them. And so if you've never shown a Black woman in your marketing messages, if they've never been a picture, if it's never been a story, like, you're leaving money on the table. And it's not like they're doing it on purpose. It's just not being conscious about, hey, like, our product can help this exact type of person. And so let's sit down and understand who our product can actually help, and then making really personalized marketing to appeal to those groups.
Right. So I try to identify those audiences that you really didn't even think about, and so that you can resonate.
And do it authentically, right? That's the big part. Like, people sometimes don't do it that authentically. And then that is the worst way you could do it. So if you're not going to do it authentically and actually care about the audiences that you're targeting and not treat them as numbers, then it's not going to work.
Right. Yeah, authenticity is a big thing, especially nowadays. And can you just talk to us maybe about maybe you can give us some examples, maybe of some recent clients or brands you admire, just help our audience illustrate what we've talked about, whether it is the data in design or the equity. Do you have anything specific in mind?
The last couple of years, we were working with Spotify for about 3 years and building this brand that we named Notable, that has since absorbed into Spotify songwriting. But it really was made to highlight the people who make the music, right? So songwriters, producers, publishers, like all the people who are behind the scenes, and making sure that they get their due credit on these songs that we make. And so a natural next step of that we helped with, we helped produce in 2022, was songwriter Wrapped. So artists got their Wrapped stats at the end of the year. As a user, I'm sure you get your Wrapped stats at the end of the year. But songwriters didn't get their stats because it wasn't just a native part of the platform, which I think it now, going into 2024, it is. But at the time, it wasn't. But they did have the data, right? So they had the data of how many plays every songwriter would have. They had to aggregate it. And so when we knew that they had the data, we said, hey, we can manually... There's some automation there. We can manually run this data and give the songwriters their own Wrapped. So I think we did about almost 1,000 of the largest songwriters and then created personalized graphics for them, pulling the data InDesign into some data merging to match the Wrapped. aspect of that year's theme, and then use AWS to automatically deliver it to the emails that were in the database. So a lot of database configuration there. People don't think that creatives know how to work in with databases and use CSVs and things like that, but we do, right? Like everyone, if you put your mind to it, you can use the tools that are available to make really great design. And so that's just another example of a previously underrepresented group, an unthought about group. And then if you give them their spotlight, and if you give them these tools and these like little mini things that you think are mini graphics, those are the things that actually make an impact, and they're sharing it. Spotify got more engagement through all these folks who are sharing their stats now for the first time they have it. And they're just really, it's a really good thing to do, to really think about everyone that makes your product work.
Yeah, I think that's a great initiative by Spotify since they started, and then you actually took that even further with those other audiences, songwriters. So that's great. And I like what you said at the beginning of our conversation, that you started doing graphic design as a hobby, right? And then you started making money, but then you realized that you need to treat it differently. It's not just a hobby. You need to treat it as a business. So my question to you is, for those who are listening, who are designers, whether it may be design students or they want to become professionals, and do you have any tips for how to take your career for aspiring designers and really make it take off and advance your career?
Yeah, I think the start is always at the portfolio, right? So when we're hiring, we're looking at portfolios day after day, and there are tons of good portfolios out there. There's tons of great portfolios out there. But I think what really sets you apart, and this is something that you're going to have to do for at your core, is being able to describe the impact that your project that is in your portfolio has made, could made, why you did what you did. Right. Like, instead of just saying, look at how awesome this website looks, just look at how awesome this brand, this logo and this brand identity looks. Like, who was the audience you're trying to hit? What did you do here? And why did you make these decisions? So that on my side, as a hirer and as a business or even a client that's looking to hire, you understand that, hey, like, they're going to do the necessary research and I can give them the autonomy to actually just run with it, right? And so that's what we're, but especially like our team's fully remote, right? So we're not going to be in the office to be able to hold your hand through a lot of things. So, and while there are young designers out there that would benefit from an office environment, just not what our environment is right now. And so we want people who are really going to be autonomous and ask for help when they need it, but like really be able to say, you know what, I'm going to take ownership of what I'm doing right now. I'm going to go above and beyond for the client here. So if that means I'm going to put this brand into motion because I know that they would benefit from it, I'm going to do different variations of it so that they can use it in Asia in the future when they said Asian expansion in our kickoff call. So let me just keep that in mind the whole time. Like just really making sure that you're tracking to business outcomes. And that's, so I think you make yourself infinitely valuable, right? Let's say you're going to go in-house somewhere and you're going to be second in line to the CMO and you're going to do a lot of brand. You're going to be in charge of the brand. If you can actually start tracking the value of the brand, here's how many people, here's awareness, right? We need to do surveying. So many brands don't do surveying if you're not, unless you're like a Fortune 500 brand. But a survey costs you a couple hundred dollars to spin up. And then if you want to like do some ad spend to get people to take the survey, but like you, if you have your existing customers, send it in an email saying, I really want you to help us grow and I want to understand you better. How did you find us? Why did you choose us? Understanding all of that and helping you grow your awareness. Like you can now, instead of just designing all day, every day, and some people want to do, that's fair. But instead of just designing all day, every day, now you've created so much value because your CMO or your CEO now knows the value of the brand and what the outcomes would be if we increase the value of the brand.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. And it's a great tip in general for designers. Having a good portfolio is critical. And then also writing case studies, not just having pretty designs on your website so people can see that you have good aesthetics, but also it comes back full circle to what we've talked about, data, the data in design, right? So if you can prove that, if you can show the result that you think strategically, that you've done the research, right? And you treat it as a business tool, not just making things look pretty, that's really appealing to employers like yourself, for example, right?
And then one quick tip, I'd rather see 5 or less really thought out case studies than 15 pictures, right? Like 15, oh, look at all this cool stuff that we did. So you don't need to go absolutely crazy to show your range on your portfolio when the range can be shown in your thinking.
Yeah, Yeah, that's also a good thing. So you try to keep your portfolio focused. It's better to have 5 good projects than 15 mediocre mm-hmm. projects, right? Because you're going to get lost there and it could be overwhelming also. But that's been great. And the last question I have for you is, what do you think about AI? Have you been using AI in your work, in your day-to-day work or your team? And what do you think about the future of AI and design? Is it going to replace some designers? Is it going to make our job more efficient? What do you think?
I think AI is a great tool. It's like a calculator, right? Like when I was first in school in math class, you weren't allowed to use calculators. And then you had to show your work, right? And then by the time I left high school, calculators were part of every test, right? It made your life more efficient. You weren't going to, if you worked in math, you weren't going to use calculators while in math, like in your real daily life. So if you can use AI as a tool to make yourself more efficient, to do bigger things, so hyper-personalization, not going to be able to, if you have a large data set, you can't really do that without AI. If we can figure out ways as creatives to be able to harness the power of AI, I think it's going to be really great. I don't think it's going to replace us, right? Like the running joke is that clients can't tell us what they want, so they're not going to be able to tell AI what they want. And at the end of the day, that's why being a strategic thinker is going to be great, because you're going to be able to think up the creative that AI can put out. I've been really enjoying playing with the tools that Adobe's put out and for AI. So creating a vector icon or something like that in an Illustrator, but the features of using AI to remove backgrounds and remove people out of and doing generative fill in Photoshop is just really stunning to me sometimes, where you're just like, hey, I want the scene to be bigger, and it like hits it perfectly, and it's like, all right, like now we have a much bigger room than we used to have and used to work with. So it's really interesting to be able to try to harness the tool, and if it replaces your menial work, then that just means you can get more output, and what you do with that output is great. So can you do 365 days worth of social content when you were doing 180 days? Can it double your output? And is that content good? So, but it's only going to be as good as the inputs that you give it.
Right. Well said. AI is just a tool, and we need to just figure out how to use this tool to make our job more efficient or more creative, right? Get better ideas. Or, as you mentioned, if you have a lot of data and you need to process that data, AI can be used to help us do so. It's been great talking to you. We're going to link to your website, which is studiodbc.com. So you guys can check it out, whether you're a potential client, you want to learn more, or a designer who just want to just get inspired and learn how things are done. But for those who want to connect with you, what's the best way to
reach out? LinkedIn. Like my LinkedIn, if we can link to that as well, but it's Carlos A. Williams on LinkedIn.
Okay.
And if you want to follow DBC on Instagram, it's at @studiodbc.
And on Instagram. Okay. We're going to link to your LinkedIn, Instagram, and the website. Thank you so much
for
being on the show.
Thank you for having me. This is awesome.
Thank you.